Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
Hello there and good morning, Carolinas. You're listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 WFNZ. We are all part of the Intercom Radio Charlotte Network. Carolina Focus is also available on podcast on WBT.com. We're your co-hosts, Sharon Thorsland. I'm Ed Billick. And this week we had the unique opportunity of spending time with Tony Marciano. Tony is the CEO and president of Charlotte Rescue Mission. The entire show is with Tony. The rescue mission, its purpose, his philosophies on addiction, just a great, great discussion. So sit back and enjoy a wonderful discussion with Tony Marciano from the Charlotte Rescue Mission.
Special day today, folks. We're down here at the Community Cafe Matters Cafe at the Charlotte Rescue Mission. We're with the CFO and President, Tony Marciano. Sharon and I are going to spend some time getting to know Tony, getting to know the Charlotte Rescue Mission's mission and their work. So sit back and enjoy a great conversation.
Well, Tony, thanks so much for hosting us here today. We were just starting in on the conversation just about this beautiful cafe that is right here, as Mark Garrison would say, in the shadows of Bank of America Stadium. It's a beautiful facility. Maybe let's start out with the history of the Charlotte Rescue Mission. How long has it been here? How did it get started?
Take you back to 1938. We were founded by 9 Christian businessmen, including the father of evangelist Billy Graham. And from 1938 to 1990, we did things that rescue missions normally do. We fed, sheltered, and clothed the poor, the homeless. But we saw people struggling with addiction coming through our doors and relapsing. And so in 1990, we decided to do something radically different. Rather than just shelter people struggling with homelessness, we decided to provide them with a comprehensive, professional, residential, Christian substance abuse recovery program. I realize that's a lot of adjectives, but there's a lot in there. It's professional. You know, our model is to employ people that are licensed clinical addiction specialists. Think of when somebody has an addiction and goes to a Betty Ford Center. All their counselors are credentialed. They're registered with the state. Our counselors are registered with the North Carolina Substance Abuse Professional Practice Board. It's residential, which means you live here. It's long-term. It's 4 months long. Some people go through 28-day programs, and at the end of 30 days, the frontal lobes of the brain clear out. You begin to realize what you've gone through, but you've been in a fog for the first 29 days. You walk out of treatment, spend $30,000, and you relapse 3 days later. And so what we're saying is it takes literally 120 days. I would say around day 85, it starts to make sense.
Wow.
It's Christian. And because as much as we use the 12 steps of AA, we identify the higher power as the person, work, and grace, mercy, and forgiveness of Jesus Christ. And we present it very differently because, you know, unfortunately for the bulk of the folks that we serve at the Rescue Mission, they have a history of sexual abuse in their life. 40 to 60% of our men, 95% of our women have that. And when you're 5'8 and 12 and somebody steals into your bedroom and violates you and you pray to God to make it stop and it doesn't stop, and 20 years later you're a resident of Charlotte Rescue Mission and we're asking you to trust a God who didn't answer that prayer when you were 5'8 and 12. And so rather than shove it down their throat, we're giving them a safe place to figure it out and to understand that God wept when that abuse occurred in their childhood. And I can't reverse their childhood. I can't change what happened to them when they were little kids. But I can give them the tools to move beyond that, because our goal is that they would achieve their God-given potential and truly become what we call an interdependent relationship with society. In other words, when my daughter graduated college, I didn't want her to be in my checkbook. Neither did I want her to have no relationship with me. So I didn't want it to be dependent. I didn't want it to be independent. I wanted it to be interdependent. And I started to say, why can't we want the same thing for people who struggle with poverty, addiction, and hopelessness? Why can't we want them to have an interdependent relationship with society where their tenants with a dream of becoming homeowners and employees perhaps with a dream of becoming business owners? And so they're achieving their God-given potential. And so today what we do is we have three core programs. Rebound is for the men. Doveness is for the women. Both of those are 120-day residential substance abuse specific programs where we're building a foundation of long-term sobriety in their lives. And understand that at the end of 30 days, they're feeling things in their gut that they never felt before. And they're going, this doesn't feel good. And I go, I know. So what are you going to do? Do what you've always done?
Tony, how many people are residents like today in both programs?
You know, at the height pre-COVID, we had 269 people under the roofs of Charlotte Rescue Mission. You know, we had a shelter in place in the whole nine yards like everybody else had to do, so we're rebuilding our census right now. But it's amazing that people are coming. In the past, people didn't keep their appointments. People are keeping their appointments.
This is since COVID.
Since COVID, people are now staying. Where do they go? What are their options? You know, so it's forcing them to pursue the treatment that they normally would have taken for granted. And so people are entering our program. They're staying. Our completion rate last year was 55%. There was a study done on us before I arrived called Treatment Center on a Shoestring Budget, and the national average for people completing these kind of programs are like 18%.
So completing, that means going through it. I mean, how about full recovery?
Okay, well, let me share that with you. So nationally, 18% of people who enter this kind of treatment complete it, the 120 days. We have 55% of our people finished a program. Of the people that finish it, 80% are still clean and sober a year later, or 6 months later. Again, national average is around, say, 14%.
Wow.
So, you know, people say to me, what's the difference? Well, I think the real difference is, as a former board president says, the secret sauce of Charlotte Rescue Mission is that we talk about who Jesus Christ is in a way that they really haven't heard before. We talk about his mercy. I had a woman who said to me once, I'm trying to get my life together so God will accept me. And I said, don't you ever say that to me. God accepts you where you are, incredibly broken, a mess, with all the imperfections of your life. And so for the folks that we serve at the mission, their idea of Christianity is, if I'm good, if I'm clean and sober, if I lead a good life, then God loves me. Notice the if-then conditional clauses. And in my opinion, Christianity is not conditional. It's unconditional. It's not if I'm good, if I'm clean and sober, if I make something of my life. It's that God loves me, period, end of sentence. And that's really hard, because at the core of every addict is what we call a shame-based identity. And guilt says I've done something wrong. Shame says I am wrong. I'm defective. If you knew me, you wouldn't like me. If God knew me, God wouldn't like me. If you ever had somebody with an addiction in your life, or even somebody in a domestic violence relationship, and you get them out of that DV relationship, and 3 months later, they're in another one. And you get them out of that one, and 4 months later, they're in another one. And they'll tell you they have a broken picker. And they don't have a broken picker. What they have is a shame-based identity that says, I'm not worthy of anything good, and I will continue in self-destructive behavior for the rest of my life. And so what we have to do is unpack the messages of that. So one of the things I love to do, and Ed, I'll do it with you, which is what I do in class. So you're ready for this? This is a quiz for you. And you can't think. I'm going to snap my finger, and you have to tell me yes or no. You ready for this? Okay, Ed, can God forgive you for a sin that I commit? Yes or no?
No.
You did it wrong. You thought. I saw you. Okay, I'll slow down the question. The question is, can God forgive you for a sin that I commit? Well, the average person hears, can God? And the answer is, yes.
Yeah, see, that's all.
But I slow it down and say, can God forgive you for a sin that was perpetrated against you when you were 5, 8, and 12? And the answer is, that's a stupid question.
Yeah.
And I go, exactly, but you've been... So you've said yes for the last 20 years of your life.
So, Tony, you're so much into the psychology, into the deep thinking here. Let's take a couple minutes. Tell us about yourself. Born, raised, why do you do what you do? You're very, very passionate. And Tony was on the David Chadwick Show here, I think it was last year, and we got into some of this. But for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you're so passionate and loving with this work.
I mean, it should be that I was the kid who did drugs in high school and pot and, you know, was arrested 20 times. And you know, my testimony is completely different. It's 2 beers and 1 senior night of high school.
Wow.
That's it. No pot, no drugs, no wild parties, no crazy sex, you know, none of that stuff. I have a very squeaky clean testimony. And I think what I've come to understand, and let me preach for just a second, is that people look at me, the residents at the Rescue Mission look at me like God has a great plan for my life because I've lived a really good life, and God has a really bad plan for them because they've lived a pretty horrific life. And part of the DNA of Charlotte Rescue Mission is that the ground at the cross is very level. So I stand on level ground at the cross with the people I serve, in spite of the fact that we have completely different backgrounds. And that's unnerving to the people we serve, and that's unnerving to the community when I speak at churches and civic groups. In fact, I've actually said, if you want to come down to the Rescue Mission and lift up the people we serve, do me a favor, stay home. Because if you're coming down here to lift them up, you don't get it. You think you're better than them, and you're coming down to lift them up, and you see the ground at the cross is very tilted. But we believe that the ground at the cross is very level. So you don't come down here to lift them up. You go and reach across and pull them to you. Or now, as we like to say, we expand the circle and include them in the circle where they stand on the outside and believe they're not worthy of being invited into the party.
Did you have when you first started with this, did you have any difficulties trying to relate to people because of this, because of your background, and you come from a completely different background from most of these people? Was it hard for you to get past that yourself, or was this just something that you just were able to segue right into?
No, and I'll take you back 2 years before I came to Charlotte Rescue Mission. I was working at a rescue mission in Washington, D.C., and I had met with one of the pastors at church for a project we were working on, and he was a counseling pastor. So I figured I would get some free counseling because I'm cheap. And I said, Chris, whenever I have to fire somebody, I stop breathing, literally stop breathing. And he said, you're an adult child of an alcoholic. And I said, I am not. He says, you are. Well, Chris was right and Chris was wrong. There was no alcoholism in my family. Growing up in Jersey, we were like every family in the Northeast. They had a basement with a full bar, knotty pine paneling. We had a neon Pabst Blue Ribbon sign, gorgeous mahogany bar. And I played Jackie Gleason, and we pretended to be bartenders. And there was 2 side cabinets with hard liquor. And none of it was ever opened. None of it was ever opened. So Chris was wrong, but Chris was right. It wasn't that I grew up in an alcoholic family. I grew up in a rageaholic family. My father was a rageaholic, and for my father, every time he acted out, every time he verbally assassinated a waitress, just like the alcoholic, when they drink, they fit into society, and when they sober up, they don't. When my father verbally assassinated a waitress, he was fine. He was good. All was well with the world. But it was like he took a hand grenade and threw it into our family, and we were all bleeding all over the place. I can recall being 10 years old and being in a Chinese restaurant in Broadway, New Jersey, like it was yesterday, watching my father go off on a waitress. And I did what every kid in an alcoholic family did. I bowed my head, closed my eyes, and pleaded with God to make it stop, and it didn't. And here's the thing. Had my mother stood up and said to my father that she was no longer tolerating this, and if my father had stood up to my mother and said, "Don't you speak to me that way," and if my mother said, "You will never talk to me this way," and had she grabbed the three of us and took a taxi home, Sharon, I wouldn't be here today, and we would not be doing this interview. Had my mother done that, she would have demonstrated healthy conflict. But instead, my mother bowed her head, closed her eyes, and waited for all the tirade to stop. And at 10 years old, my mother taught me how to deal with my father's verbal assaults, which is no different than how a kid grows up in an alcoholic family. There's 13 characteristics of being raised in an adult child, being raised in an alcoholic family. It's called adult children of an alcoholic. And things like being super responsible or super irresponsible, being extremely loyal, being impulsive, never finishing projects through from beginning to end, being really hard on yourself. And I resonate with 11 of those 13 characteristics. So to answer your question, Chris put me through a 12-week series called Making Peace with Your Past, Adult Help for Adult Children of Dysfunctional Families. And it began to become life-changing. In fact, I had a radio show in D.C. who was comparable to WBT. Mm-hmm. It was their news, traffic, and weather station. It was 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And, like, you know, who's up in D.C. at 6 o'clock in the morning? And my radio show had the worst intro. It was like a song from the 1930s. And the board would let me change it. Well, I decided 2 weeks after everything I was learning in this workshop, because it was every Sunday night from 7 to 9, that I would share it on this radio show. Okay. And suddenly, Washington, D.C. was lighting up. People were getting up to listen to me at 6 o'clock in the morning in our nation's capital. I had people writing me letters. We had so many requests for copies of the broadcast. I had to ask my church to use their cassette, so you know how long ago this was, cassette duplication machine. And my board chair got really mad at me for doing this and wanted me to just go back doing Bible studies. And I did. And nobody ever talked to me again. And what I realized is working through the 12 weeks and to deal with everything from perfection and procrastination to forgiveness to the roles of the family, I realized that there's four roles in the addicted family: the hero, the scapegoat, the lost child, and the clown. And what's very interesting is that in the addicted family, you have, okay, I'll use my family as my illustration. So my father was the rageaholic. My mother was the codependent who never confronted him. And there was three of us. So one of my siblings, I won't name who, became the hero and became the overachiever. Was actually voted in her yearbook most likely to succeed, because the hero is trying to prove that the family isn't crazy. One of us was labeled the scapegoat, because if we just acted like the older sister or brother, everything would be fine in the family. One of us became the lost child, the invisible one, because this is the kid in the movie Home Alone. How do you go to Europe for 2 weeks and leave your kid behind? This is the kid in the movie Cheaper by the Dozen, known as FedEx, who played with bugs and snakes. And he became invisible. And the last one is the clown, because somebody's got to put a smile on the family's face. Here's the interesting part. We know that God's number is 7. Stay with me for a second. I want to preach. And what's Satan's number? It's not 4,972. It's 6. It's one digit off God's number. So in the healthy family, the parents meet the emotional needs of the children. In the addicted family, the children meet the emotional needs of the parents. And so you grew up in this world thinking, does anybody care if I suck oxygen on this planet? And the answer is no. Because my role was to keep this family looking good. So my father treated me like the scapegoat. And for whatever reason, I should have tattoos up and down my body. I should have been arrested 20 times. I should have been doing drugs and alcohol. And for whatever reason, which I'll never understand, I responded to my father as the very compliant lost child. very invisible. And what I realized is these were masks that Tony wore all of his life to survive a very chaotic and unpredictable world. And what God has been doing over the last 20-plus years is helping me take off those masks.
We're visiting with Tony Marciano, who's the president and CEO of Charlotte Rescue Mission. And Tony's opening up with us about his life and his passion for this work. Sharon and I are here today visiting. We're at the Community Cafe Matters. This will be part of a series show of shows Tony would like to do in different aspects of the ministry here. So just connect the dots for us. How long have you been here? How long have you been over this organization?
And what brought you to Charlotte?
I've been here 24 years, but what brought me to Charlotte was a really bad job interview in Branson, Missouri. What happened was I was in Washington, D.C. at a rescue mission. A friend of mine called me about this Christian camp called Camp Kanakuk. Some of your listeners would know about it. It's pretty famous. And I went for the job interview, and I had to fly into Branson during the blizzard of 96. And sure, my flight was delayed. Another candidate coming from Orlando, Florida, was delayed. We both landed at the Branson airport within 5 minutes of each other. They violated all the rules of interviewing. They put two of us in the same camp vehicle instead of different vehicles and drove us from the airport to this cabin. I said cabin, not hotel, because I thought this was Branson, like the second largest country music center of the country. We're going to be in a swank hotel with a jacuzzi. We're in a cabin that was built in the 1950s. Not only were we in a cabin, but we're in the same room in the cabin. Two beds at least. Thank you, Lord, for that. And they said to us, we'll be back in 2 hours to take you to Applebee's. And I literally prayed, God, give them the good sense to take us to separate tables at Applebee's, and they didn't. They took us out to the same table at Applebee's. So, like you and I are sitting across the table from one another right now, I sat across the table from Jim Subers with two staff members on either end. Most awkward meal of my life. We got back to the cabin that we were sharing, the room. Not the cabin, the room that we were sharing. He said, this is crazy, let's pray. So we prayed on the porch, and he said, well, if you don't get, give me your card. He goes, if you don't get this job in Branson, I got a friend of mine in Charlotte, North Carolina. They're looking for an executive director of a Christian rehab center. I didn't even know that Charlotte, North Carolina existed, okay? So I didn't get the job, and whoever this Larry guy was never going to call me. And I said to God, I have no idea why you took me through the blizzard of 96, and getting to Branson, and I don't understand you at all, God. So just, you know, that's kind of how I talk to God. And 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from the vice president of the board, and I still have the slip, Larry Scott.
And what year was that?
That was February of 1996. I interviewed March 1st of 96, and I came July 15th of 96, and it's been an incredible run ever since.
When you arrived here, what did you find?
When we pulled up, and I never forgot this, we were driving down West 1st Street where the Rebound campus is located, and I said to myself, Lord, these are the ugliest looking buildings I've ever seen in my life. And as I said the word life, Larry says, we're here, let's get out of the car. And I just went, oh, you know. And as you walk through the buildings, the floors were installed in the 1920s. They're 8-inch asbestos tile with lots of wax over them. You can't remove them because of asbestos issues. I went to use the bathroom and I was like, this is really, really bad. And it's not the building. It's what God does inside the building, that he can take somebody whose life is incredibly broken and rebuild it from the inside out. 8 years ago, we expanded Dove's Nest, our women's division, from a 12-bed to 120-bed facility.
Is that in a different location?
Yes, it's 4.5 miles away on West Boulevard, by West Boulevard and Billy Graham Parkway. Okay. So if you know the intersection of East, West, and South Boulevard, where the Fuel Pizza is exactly 3.1 miles west of there. And so we built this, really, it's a glorious-looking building, and I'm glad we did, because nobody ever wants to go for treatment. Nobody ever wants to go for recovery. And we built it to look like a retreat center in Blowing Rock. And I've had women say to me, I couldn't believe that someone built a place this nice, and this is what they say for somebody like me. And the somebody like me is typical of a conversation I had 4 weeks ago with a woman. She came to me after chapel. Her cheeks were literally going up and down, huge puddles of tears in her eyes, and she said, I just called my boyfriend earlier today, and he told me I'm a piece of trash, and he wishes that I was dead, but I can't break up with him. And I said, let me get this. In fact, she used the word something worse than trash, but I can't say it on the radio. And I said, let me get this straight. He said that you're a piece of trash. He wished you were dead, and you don't want to break up with him. She goes, no, I can't. She said, my 10-year-old daughter hates how he treats me. And she said, I would give up my daughter for him. And we talked, and she couldn't. But think about, we talked earlier about this whole idea of shame. In the shame of her soul, all she believed was she was worthy of somebody who would tell her that she wished that she was dead. And it took weeks of sitting in class and being in a safe environment that she doesn't come up to me anymore after class and talk to me about her boyfriend, because she's found a place that's safe and a place where she's loved and she's valued and respected, instead of being told that she's a worthless human being. And so we're unpacking so much of that each and every day.
Tony, do you, besides the executive responsibilities you have, did I just catch that you also teach, or you also run some sessions, or what other kind of work do you do? What's your daily activities here, or your weekly activities?
You know, my job is to get 2 and 2 to equal 5, 6, and 7 every day. If it ever equals 4, the board needs to fire me, and that's in all realms. I do 2 classes a week. One is a men's Bible study on Friday mornings, and one is a women's codependency class. And the joke is that Tony's the most codependent person on staff, that we're hoping that he loses his codependency, and then everything will be fine. But my codependency is real. It's I'm a people pleaser. And so when I'm teaching them about codependency and people-pleasing and desperately seeking approval, it's not because I have it together. I don't. I still work on this every single day. I trip. I have taught them that boundaries is biblical, even though I was taught it wasn't. I have taught them that the word no is extremely biblical, even though when I was in college, my college campus pastor said to me that Jesus never said no, and I wish he had read the first chapter of the Gospel of Mark, because Jesus says no to Peter. And no is a full sentence, so it's not no because. So if you say to me, Tony, can I borrow your car? And I say, no, Ed, because you always go to McDonald's and leave the French fries on the floor, and then it stinks. I really want your approval, because I'm telling you why I said no. When you say to me, can I borrow your car? The answer is no. Why? No. Why? No. Why? Well, you have to tell me why. No, I don't. No is a full sentence. And you don't have to respect my no, but I'm not obligated to tell you why I said no. And giving them the freedom to say no is huge. I did an exercise one day in class. I said, all right, everybody stand up. All of you on the left side, you're going to walk down the hall there. All of you on this side, you're going to walk down the hall there. And you cannot look at the carpet. And they all went, oh. And I said, because I am, I'll use a good Jersey expression, fed up with some of you knowing every carpet stain at the Charlotte Rescue Mission DoveSense program. Because you walk with your head down. And I want you to walk with your head up. And you cannot look at the carpet. And they all went, oh. And I said, because you walking with your head down screams of your lack of self-confidence and lack of self-esteem. You know, and in the Christian arena, we tend to use the word humility, but we define it incorrectly. We define humility as thinking less of yourself. And I totally disagree with that definition. As a Christ follower, I should have strong self-confidence and strong self-esteem. So humility is not thinking less of myself. Humility is thinking of myself less of the time. Let me say that again. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less of the time. So I wanted them to walk down the 2 corridors, and they had to look at the banister or the doors and could not look at the carpet. And you would think, like, how hard was this? It was like the hardest exercise I've ever done with them, but I was driving home the point that you see yourself as damaged goods, And because one of the characteristics of addiction is that you don't finish things you start, you're going to self-sabotage, you're going to quit the program, hook up with some person, and you're going to relapse an hour later and say, well, this is my life. And I'm going, this is not your life. This is what you believe your life is. And I will say that my God hung on a cross for you for 3 hours. So don't tell me that you are damaged goods, because I don't accept that.
You know, so many of our listeners this morning here on Carolina Focus can relate to what you were saying. They may have family members, I know I do, that have these same characteristics. So it's very helpful for us. We're talking to Tony Marciano. Sharon and I are here to Community Cafe Matters. Let's just summarize just overall this facility we're in. So you said Dove's Nest is for the women. Rebound is for the men.
Right, correct.
And what is this cafe? I mean, I see people in and out of here having breakfast this morning. Is it open to the public? The funding? Tell us a little bit about this place.
Community Matters Cafe was launched in April of 2019.
Were you idea or?
No. It was one of our grant writers, Amy, kept walking through her. It was just an old warehouse. And so we needed to turn it into a coffee shop and restaurant.
And again, Tony Marciano, CEO and president of Charlotte Rescue Mission, as Sharon and I visited him this past week. Hey, coming up after the break, more of Tony, more of the mission, and more of Community Matters Cafe, right here on Carolina Focus. Stay tuned. Well, welcome back to Carolina Focus. You're listening to Carolina Focus right here on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, right here on 107.9 The Link, and also right here on 102.5 610 WFNZ. It is also available as a podcast on WBT.com. Sharon Thorsland and I, Ed Billick, are your co-hosts. We are at the Community Cafe Matters at the Charlotte Rescue Mission. And let us continue our discussion with Tony Marciano, the CFO and president of Charlotte Rescue Mission.
And in the fall of 2016, without me knowing it, my staff submitted my name to what's called C20, which is a social venture partnership. It's like being on The Bachelorette and Shark Tank all at once. They take 20 nonprofits, they pare you down to 10, okay, which is The Bachelorette, and then the 10 stand in front of 900 charlatans, and if you win first, second, or third place, you get a prize. So they submitted me and Charlotte Rescue Mission in the cafe, and we got selected. They normally take 20 young nonprofits. That year they took 19 puppy Labrador retrievers and one old Labrador retriever called Charlotte Rescue Mission. And I had to figure out a 3-minute speech with no props, no cards.
There's funding here. Funding, of course.
With no props, no cards, no nothing.
But you could do that.
Oh, it was hard. The first time I did it, I talked so fast nobody could understand me.
But it's a jersey and you're coming out.
But, Ed, what I did is it helped me hone a couple of things. It helped me hone our elevator speech. If you time me, this is what I figured it out. Everything we do is about transformation. With a focus on individuals struggling with addiction, we uniquely work from the inside out to address the root cause. And we accomplish that by providing professional Christian residential recovery services. I can do that in 18 seconds now. And then as I looked more at the cafe, I realized that for the folks I serve, they can get a job, they can't keep a job. They don't have the life skills necessary to really keep a job. And it goes back to the fact that for the average resident at the Rescue Mission, they started drinking at ages 10, 11, and 12. The earliest I've heard is 5, but I don't even go to that. So what 12-year-old, and this is what I said in my speech, wants to show up for work on time, take orders from a supervisor, balance their AA and church involvement, and keep their life intact.
So all these people serving breakfast here, cooking, they're all residents or were residents?
They were residents of Rebound and Dove's Nest, so they had to finish the 4-month program, and they apply, like going from undergraduate to graduate school,
right,
to become students in Community Matters Cafe. Not everybody is accepted.
So then with this experience, then they can go off and work in other restaurants and maybe even some high-end restaurants with tips and all? I mean, is this like a stepping stone?
I'm going to say no, because the purpose of this is not to prepare them for the food service industry. The purpose of this is to teach them how to have life skills that they never learned but desperately need. Some of them don't even enjoy food services, but they're learning life skills. They're learning to leave their junk at the door. Addicts don't know how to live life on life's terms. When something happens, they just go out the front door and they relapse to prove to you that they still have control over their life. They have huge control issues, and they'll prove to you that they can still be in control, but they self-sabotage everything that they've done. So this is about, so as only God does, I couldn't find a curriculum nationwide for teaching life skills, only to learn that Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte Works developed one a few years ago.
Wow.
And we borrowed that curriculum, and so for the first 2 weeks, they are in intense curriculum education learning life skills. The other 5.5 months is learning how to execute it. And it's really interesting. When I order with a student, I always do something to mess things up. Like, I know that the chicken sandwich is on this kind of the sourdough bread, but I don't want the sourdough bread. Can I get the toasted rye bread with my sandwich? Yeah. Now, they have to get that correct back in the kitchen, which they probably won't. And it's going to come out, and I'm going to have sourdough bread. I'm going to say, but I ordered the toasted wheat bread. And they're going to learn how to be flexible and adapt, because that's what the real world is about. So I'm not giving them a hard time.
No, is this your idea? Did you create this concept here at this cafe?
No. This is like a huge team effort.
Okay, well, yeah.
Okay, so going back to C20, so we won third place, which is like, I never expected to win. I just wanted to present and see if like somebody was interested in the audience. We won third place, and I went, oh, this is about to happen. And so we started working on this, and there was a group of insurance partners called Community Matters that took about 20 insurance companies and put aside their competitive differences to raise around roughly $200,000 a year. And they partnered with places like Safe Alliance, Crisis Assistance Ministry, Charlotte Family Housing, and then they came to us. And they started volunteering and fell in love with us. And they said, normally we're here for a year, we give you $200,000 and we leave. How about if we're here for 5 years, we give you $1 million, you change your name from Cafe Rescue to Community Matters Cafe. And we said, great, that changed the name. And it is about Community Matters. And then that gave us the credibility to raise the other $1 million for this project.
What kind of, I mean, I know right now it's in the middle of coronavirus pandemic, but how has the community responded to this, just the cafe in particular? I mean, what did you have a lot of people coming in here on a regular basis? What's been the response?
Pre-COVID-19, you had to make a lunch reservation or you were bumped out. I was bumped out twice. And they said, we don't care who you are, you didn't make a reservation. And I had lunch in the coffee shop area with my guests because I forgot to make a reservation.
Wow.
It's become a real trendy place for people. There's 65 parking places in the shadow of Bank of America Stadium that are free. You know, where else do you find that? The food, we wanted excellence. If you notice on this table, there's no ketchup squeeze bottles. There's no paper napkin dispensers. There's none of that. This, what we really wanted is an experience of excellence. The water, I know your listeners can't see it, but the water bottle's in a glass carafe. It's not where the waitress turns the pitcher sideways and spills water all over your table and says, sorry, and you now have a soaking wet table. And what we're doing is we're teaching them about a world that they never experienced before, so that places like Ruth Chris Steakhouse and others are hiring them because they've already worked with the glass carafes, the cloth napkins. There's no paper napkins. There's silverware. There's no plasticware. If you ordered coffee, they don't just carry the cup. It's on a tray that comes to you. One of our volunteers is Charlotte's number one waiter, Michael Miles. He's one of the waiters at Ruth Chris Steakhouse, and he volunteers here at Community Matters Cafe to teach our students a Ruth Chris level of excellence in service. And that's what, and so the people know that the food is excellent, the service is excellent, the ambiance is excellent. And I remember bringing one pastor in, and he walked in and he couldn't talk. And I said, I know what you're thinking. You thought, and no offense to Goodwill, but you thought we went to Goodwill, bought some broken down furniture, threw it in here, put some ketchup squeeze bottles in, a paper napkin dispenser, and said, well, this is the rescue mission.
Being in the food business in my years with Frito-Lay, we were always taught, especially around food safety. When I first entered the cafe this morning, I had to hit the men's room. It was spotless. It was immaculate. And to me, men's women's rooms, it always tells you about the culture. If that's taken care of, then that kitchen must be spotless.
Exactly, and I've heard that before. That if the bathrooms are clean, you can be sure that the kitchen is clean.
Yeah, when I'm traveling, or my wife and I always check the bathroom out before we decide if we're going to eat there.
In fact, the railings, as you were coming down the steps, have been wiped so many times that we literally wiped the paint off the railings.
Oh, wow.
And they've had to be repainted. So we're really careful about making sure that customers feel really good about this as a destination place and not worrying about COVID.
Then is there a profit here? And, of course, the profit goes back into helping the residents and helping the folks here.
So what happens is somebody who completes the program gets what we call an award, and that helps them launch themselves in life. Okay, so that's a financial award for them to, maybe they have to buy a car, maybe they have to put a down payment on an apartment or something like this. So that becomes our way of saying to them, we're proud of you, you finished this. And we do graduation ceremonies with cap and gown and everything like that. And people just come out and we pray on them and we pray for them. And think about it, they have been in at least 10 months, and it's probably like 11 months, under the roof of Charlotte Rescue Mission, building a foundation of long-term sobriety, building a foundation of life skills. Again, what do we want for them? We want this interdependent relationship with society. I want you to be able to walk into any business in Charlotte and know or not know that the person serving you was or was not a graduate of Charlotte Rescue Mission.
We're speaking with Tony Marciano, who's the president and CEO of the Charlotte Rescue Mission. We're in the lovely Community Matters Cafe, which is a really cavernous building with really tall ceilings, exposed beams. It's a really neat ambiance. Before we started recording this interview, you told us that this used to be a spindle warehouse. Tell us a little bit about the history of this building and the Charlotte, the entire Rebound program,
the campus
here.
I think I read since 1938 it's really been here in Charlotte, been in many different facilities. This is a beautiful area, and the rescue mission itself looks really nice. Break it down for us.
Okay, so 1938 we were founded, and we were located on Church Street. In fact, Jean Ford, Billy Graham's sister, used to go with her father, who was one of the founders of Charlotte Rescue Mission, and help her father with the chapel services on Church Street. We outgrew it, and the story that was told to me was two famous Charlottines, Arthur Smith from the Cracker Jacks, who used to be on WBT.
Absolutely.
And Bill Poe from the Parker Poe and Bernstein Law Firm were on the board of Charlotte Rescue Mission. They negotiated the purchase of our Rebound men's building from Humble Oil, who was Standard Oil, who became Humble Oil, who became Esso, Exxon, ExxonMobil.
Wow.
And Humble Oil or Standard took back a note. I think it was like $68,000 or $168,000. This is in 1960. The story goes is that for like 6 years, Bill Poe and Arthur Smith, every quarter would go back to Humble Oil and say, we need an extension on the loan. We need an extension on the loan. This went on for 6 or 7 years. Finally, the day came when these two great charlatans said, we don't need an extension on the loan. We need it forgiven.
Wow.
And Humble Oil canceled the debt.
Wow.
And it was a debt that we could not pay for the love of anything. And I say to myself, that's exactly what God does every day. He takes people that have done some horrific things in their life, that society would see them as a castaway, and they can't repay back to God what they've done. And God in Christ cancels their sin and says, there's no record of it anymore. And so that's how we came to own the main building. Some years later, we purchased the building you're in right now, Community Matters Cafe. But it was 100 years ago, it was a spindle factory when Charlotte was a sewing town. And so, ironically, this was the spindle factory. Next door was the headquarters for Standard Oil. And they used to deliver oil to all the spinning factories. And where our volleyball court is, they used to keep mules. And the mules would be hooked up to carts, and they'd put oil on the carts and barrels and deliver them to all the spindle factories in Charlotte to keep them spinning. And this building here made those spindles. Well, of course, things changed. We're no longer a sewing town. This later became a waterproofing company. And then the family sold us this building. We used it as a thrift store for several years. And then we relocated our thrift store business to Albemarle Road, which we got out of. some years later, and then it sat idle. The story goes also that in 2003, the roof was collapsing. It needed a lot of repairs. And the board said to me, tear it down. And it made sense. Like, why would you invest $200,000 in a building you had no need of? And so we came across a donor who loved old buildings. And he said, I'll take care of it. He never wrote me a check, or wrote us a check. And he fixed all the joists, and I can show you up in front where some of the more visible work was done. He replaced the roof. He dealt with asbestos. He changed the water supply. And we got to own it. Now think about this. This building was scheduled to be demolished. It was seen as disposable. It had no value. And think of the people I serve every day. How does society see them? Disposable, having absolutely no value. Yet, Sharon, you're saying that this is gorgeous, this is wonderful. And just like God canceled the debt on our Rebound campus, God also spared this building of being demolished. Because God knew, I didn't, what this place would eventually turn into. And God does the same thing every day. He takes people that maybe we see holding a sign that says hungry will work for food. And God's got such bigger plans for them than to be panhandling every day beginning at 5 a.m.
Absolutely.
Tony, this has been wonderful here on Carolina Focus and through WBT and the other Intercom stations. We'd like to continue the discussion in future interviews, tours of the facilities. Maybe, Sharon, we do one on Dove's Nest alone, or one we go deeper into this place. And, of course, we also work the rescue mission. But we love partnering with you. I know our organization at Intercom loves the work you do. You know, I was asking Sharon before we came in, I said, you know, there's so many organizations in town here that do good for people. Charlotte Rescue Mission has to stand out. Give us a couple things. I think our listeners have already picked up on that, but what makes you so uniquely different than a lot of the others? This isn't a competition. And then, oh, by the way, how can people help support what you're doing?
You know, the heartbeat and soul of Charlotte Rescue Mission is transformation. You know, people often say, you know, do you run through Matthew 25? When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison, you visited me. I go, no, we're different. We run through John 6. And John 6 is 2 days in the life of Jesus. On day one, Jesus feeds 5,000 people. That night, the disciples float across the lake. Jesus walks across the lake. And the crowd the next day followed him across the lake to get food day two. But Jesus chooses not to feed them, and he preaches at them. By verse 66, 5,000 people leave. In fact, he says to Peter, are you going to leave too? And Peter says, who else has the words to eternal life? Now stay with me for a second. This is the equation. Day one, God says, I love you so much, I accept you just as you are. We are called to feed, shelter, and clothe the poor. But day two, God says, I love you too much to leave you there. And that's the hard work of transformation. It's too easy to do day one work. But day two work is really where the rubber meets the road. And that, in my opinion, is the heart and soul of God in working with the poor, that he wants their lives transformed. He wants their lives changed. And that's what we do every day. Our focus is transformation. Our focus is working from the inside out to address those root causes. So I know it's hard right now with COVID-19. We used to have people serving meals 3 times a day, 7 days a week, and that's on hold. But, you know, your listeners can go to our webpage, charlotterescuemission.org. Just recently we had Veterans Bridge Home did a food drive for us. It was a lot of fun, so groups can do those sort of things. There's always need of toiletries, clothing item, please new underwear, no offense, not used. You know, and I say to folks all the time, you rip open that package of BVDs that no one's ever worn, and you put it on, and you feel like Superman or Superwoman, okay? And, you know, maybe an office group wants to do us an Undy Monday drive.
We just saw an office group in this other room here. A couple of young business guys in here had their breakfast here.
Exactly. And right behind you and I is the private dining room of Community Matters Cafe, so groups can meet there. We have technology and all of that. So that's another way. But let me just say, go back to Community Matters Cafe. And you said to me, how can people support? So you come and you have breakfast, lunch, or coffee or whatever. And you're part of what I call a real world laboratory experiment. That's what you are. When you came here today, you're part of a real-world laboratory experiment. Had we ordered food, your server is a student in the Charlotte Rescue Mission. And they have to get it right, and they have to learn how to serve coffee. And Sharon, you're sitting across the table, so how do they not put their elbow into Ed's face and get the coffee cup to you? They don't know how to do that, but they have to learn how to do that, and they're going to mess it up, and they're going to forget to get the hot sauce or the extra thing of ranch dressing. And you have to remind them. So when you come and they mess things up or they get things right, you're part of a real-world laboratory experiment or process to help transform lives. You're not getting a chicken sandwich. You're not getting eggs and bacon. You're part of the transformation process for that student's life. And that's one of the easiest ways that during COVID-19 that your listeners can say, I know we can't serve a meal at the mission. What else can we do? Come down here. Have breakfast, have lunch. We're open Monday to Friday, 7 to 3, with 65 parking places. And you can be part of the transformation of what God is doing in the hearts and lives of the people we serve.
You're clearly so passionate about everything that you do here. What, I know it's probably hard to summarize, but what is the most rewarding thing for you about what you do?
I love when we have a graduate who comes back and he's married to the woman of his dreams. He's connected to his grandchildren that are living in Atlanta. He's a manager of a prominent Charlotte corporation that'll leave anonymous right now. He supervises 30 people. He's got the biggest smile across his face. He loves God. He loves life. But I'll tell you that the thing that got him here was he came home one weekend and spent $10,000 in drugs and sold all his furniture. And on Monday morning when he woke up, all the cash was gone and all his furniture was gone. And he started with nothing. And look at where he is today. He's a homeowner. And his life is rich. And I love knowing that God can take somebody who has lost everything. And, you know, there's a verse in Joel that says that I will restore the years that the locusts have devoured. And the locusts devoured his life. $10,000 over one weekend on drugs, and it pawned his furniture. And you know, we would think that, well, we'll get him just some horrible housing, and he can eke out the rest of his life as punishment for all the sins he committed. And that's really what we think. We don't say that, but we think that. And God goes, no, I will restore the years that the locusts have devoured. And that's what God does every day.
Beautiful. Tony, thank you for your time. Sharon, gosh, I'm moved. And I'm looking forward to future discussions and future time here on Carolina Focus with Tony and his staff.
Absolutely. And this has been just, I feel like we've just hit the tip of the iceberg here. I want to know so much more information about the different programs and everything that you're doing here. It's just amazing. So we will definitely be following up with this and having more conversations with you. So thank you so much for joining us today, Tony.
Thank you for having me on the show.
We've been speaking with Tony Marciano. He is the president and CEO of the Charlotte Rescue Mission. And you've been listening to Carolina Focus right here on WBT, WFNZ, and WLNK.
Well, Sharon, that was an impressive hour with Tony. What was your takeaways there at the Charlotte Rescue Mission?
You know, it's interesting. I was telling Tony this after we completed the interview. I parked on that street a million times going to Panther practices over there on their practice fields off Cedar Street. I've parked there. I've walked by the facility. I've brought food there to donate around Thanksgiving. But I've never really thought about what was really in there and who was really in there and what they were doing. And it was such an eye opener to me to realize that it, you know, it's just not this facade with the Charlotte Rescue Mission and, you know, some people straggling around outside. I mean, it is obviously just an unbelievable organization and the things that Tony and his group are doing over there. And it's, we just got just a taste of what they're doing. And the programs are really impressive, and it was just really eye-opening to me to see what they're doing, how they're doing it, what kind of an impact it's making on people. And, you know, he said they have a $7 million budget, and they have to fund that all completely themselves. And so Tony's wearing so many hats there, and Chief Fundraiser is obviously one of them. And to fund that and to do all that, a $7 million budget every year to fund all of their programs, and they are managing to do that and make such an impact on people that it just blew me away. So I really hope that people who are listening to this will take the time to go to their website and you know, Google Charlotte Rescue Mission, and it'll pop right up. And their website is phenomenal. It has so much information on it and links to everything. If you need help, if you know somebody who needs help, or if you just want to volunteer, say, hey, I want to make a difference, there are plenty of opportunities on that website to point you in the right direction so you can help in any way you want or get help if you need it. So I thought it was really, really a neat program, and it was really, really interesting to me to learn more about it today.
So Sharon, there's so many other different aspects and topics we can explore there at the Charlotte Rescue Mission. So thanks for joining me this past week. And folks, enjoy your Sunday. We'll be with you again next week on Carolina Focus.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.